I can see we are getting a little bit late. Unfortunately, there are things that are beyond our control today. The weather is bad, transport, there are no trains, but this is the members are coming. But I feel we need to start. Yes, we do have a number of apologies, but this is we can start in our meeting. Looking at the three topics that are in front of us today, the consolidation of NFC 2016. Today, we're going to get to the clear picture to say how is it performed in South Africa last year. And getting to a very interesting topic, honorable member, DG of the possible measure of examination. If I can share with you how big I was this weekend, getting calls from various media houses, having an understanding of the government when they look at the measure of examination, what they were Dr. Popoli, and so for that. I think the understanding they had taken even from the Mail and Guardian last week, when they saw the topic of making of examinations, I think what struck their mind was we are talking about the possible measure of IEP and our public examinations and all. You can't believe the interviews that I had to say what is it that you're talking about, what is this possible measure that they've been talking about. But at least I did explain it to say what is it and invited them to come and listen to those possibilities in the presentation. Then we'll be taking the remark in Anna to know what is it that will come in the place of Anna. So those are the three presentations that we'll be taking today. Can I hand over to you, Mr. Brown, whatever they are in the
thanks for taking the apologies. Having this team from Honorable Lepoto, Honorable Koza, Honorable Guni, Honorable Ollis, Honorable Machenke, Honorable Ika. Honorable Kosa will be joining us just a few minutes later because he's also going to be joining us. Also, apologies from the department.
Thank you very much for that. We were looking forward to meet our new member today, unfortunately, it wasn't our privilege. But to convey our message that we welcome you to this committee and officially to the next week again when President Bushi will go past us and think to get the report that you announced in the committee. So we will and just to welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the welcome. Honorable Honest had already put in leave the constituency work prior to him knowing that he was going to be shuffled and become the new shadow minister. So that's why he's not here.
Thank you very much for that. DG, can I then hand over to you?
Honorable Chair, honorable members, I thought you would have been informed that the Deputy Minister might join us. Just to indicate that he is attending the Cabinet Committee and as soon as he's done, he can then join us. The presentation, Chair, as you correctly pointed out, covers in the main the three main areas. It's about public exams in terms of the national senior between November and March, supplementary exams. It's also about the possible measure of supplementary exams for March and June. And then the last bit of it will be the national assessment, the remote assessment. And the presentation will be done by Dr. Rufus Boya, who is the Chief Director for Public Health Service National Assessment. If you allow, Chair, I will then move over to the
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, and thank you for this opportunity of presenting these three important components of proposals in terms of the work we do. In fact, two are proposals, and one of them is a report on the performance of the system. The first presentation would be on the NSC consolidated position, followed by the merging, and lastly would be the remodel. I think just to mention, Honourable Chair, that the supplementary exam is considered a second sitting of the 2016 NSC exams, and therefore the consolidation of the performance in the November with the supplementary provides the nation with a complete picture of the performance of the class of 2016. This completes the full cycle in terms of the class of 2016. We have the dates on which the exam is written, and I think just to emphasize that the supplementary examination has specific requirements for admission, and the learner must have failed a... Apologies for that. It looks at learners who have failed two subjects or failed the attainment of the NSC by two subjects, which means they can write a maximum of three, but it also looks at learners who have missed admission to bachelor studies or diploma by one. The supplementary examination were successfully administered. The only problem we had was the disruption caused by protest action. Now, what is important is because the supplementary is a part of the November, it's conducted following the same standards, same procedures, quality assured by UMALUC, monitored by the department. The results are finally approved by UMALUC. And this gives us a sense of the size of this exam. And obviously, Chair and Members, a concern is the difference between the numbers that enroll and the numbers that finally write. We have almost a 38% no-show, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And we try to administer this exam across as many centers as possible so that travel does not become a challenge for learners. Now, this slide presents a complete picture per province of the number of candidates that enroll and the number of candidates that enroll. And what we do on an annual basis is to compare these statistics with previous years. Because I think trend analysis are of critical importance. Now, if you look at the percentage no-show in terms of the 2016 supplemental examination, we had a 34.6% overall, and that has increased to 38.2%. And what is of concern is the high level in certain other provinces, for example, Eastern Cape, and even Gauteng, which is as high as 50%. Now, looking at the performance, finally, in terms of combining the supplementary examination results with the November, we see the improvement across all provinces, and very interesting and I think encouraging is the fact that Limpopo has the highest improvement of 3.7%, and Northern Cape 3%, and the others range between 1.5 in the main up to 2.7. The national improvement is 2%, and what I can say, Honorable Chair, that the 2% is the highest we've had over the last 3 years when one looks at combined results. In 2014, we had an improvement of 1.3, 2015, 2016, 1.4, and now 2016, 2017, 2%. So it simply means there's something that we've done, and we know that that something is certainly the support in terms of our second chance program that has been offered to learners that has contributed to this improvement when compared to previous years. This is a slide just showing the performance of the various provinces. This is also another important analysis, Honorable Chair, in the sense what we're doing here is we're comparing our combined for 2015-2016 with 2016-2017. In other words, we're comparing apples with apples. And if one looks at that comparison nationally, we've improved our consolidated performance from 72.1 to 74.5, an improvement of 2.4% overall when comparing 2015-2016 with 2016-2017. This slide looks at the improvement in terms of the categories of passes, in terms of bachelor's, diplomas, and certificate. And if one looks at it, there's an improvement across every category. And in my last slide, I will provide a summary of the improvement in terms of the different types of passes. If one looks at the subject, I think in terms of subject passes, the picture is reflective of what we saw in November. We are seeing improvements in subjects like accounting, importantly mathematics and physical science, but obviously the concern is you know, with some of the subjects like business studies, economics, geography as well, that there's been a drop. And those are certainly our priority subjects in terms of intervention moving forward. But I think what is encouraging, Honorable Chair, is that we're seeing the steady improvement in performance in math and physical science, which means that the interventions and the support programs in these two areas specifically are beginning to bear fruit. The summary of the gains. And I think, despite the no-show, the fact that 13,765 more candidates now attain the NSC, I think is significant. We have 9,561 candidates that obtain the highest certificate, in other words, that's the addition, and 2,619 are now added to the number that obtained the diploma studies, and the number of candidates that obtained admission to bachelor studies, 1,564. So our final number in terms of bachelor admission to bachelor studies now stands at 163,398. Honorable Chair, should I continue with the next presentation? Does that bring us to the end of the first?
And the improvements that you have talked about.
have the second which is the
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the invitation. I think I just want to ask two questions in relation with the fact that you're saying that now you want to compress the two exams only the...
No,
you're not there yet.
Not yet. All right, not yet. But just here now, just the final consolidation of the
I just want to allow you to welcome the presentation, and it's so pleasing to see that at least we have improved, although there's a large percentage of learners who are in I would like to know what strategies do you have in place to avoid such a and what are the problems? What have you noticed? What are the problems that cause such an aspect? Looking at this presentation, I don't know whether it is just left out because it's a series of another presentation. Special schools are not reserved for special schools are not captured. Let's have to and I noticed that there's a tendency of teachers being reluctant in supporting learners during normal school period. Because they rely on these support programs like camping, taking the great students out and so forth and so forth. What measures do you have in to make sure that the teachers are also accountable? They teach when they are supposed to. They are in class on time and learners are learning. To avoid, because I noticed that in this program, they contribute in the corpus of the department as well. And they are very expensive.
Dr. Paul, the 1.7 difference. Did you make any changes in the treatment on how the problems would have performed? But in a, we welcome really the increase. Trying by all means to avoid to go where Honorable Basson has wanted to say, but we are so much worried about the high percentage of the no-shows when it comes to this. Very much interested to hear the lessons and what you have observed and how we are going to circumvent this, because I think it causes a lot of concern. Fully understanding Dr. Paulo that what you are asking can will be highly covered maybe even in the forthcoming presentation that you are coming up with, because having gone through your presentation, I think it's one of the things that you are going to be touching is to say, how can you respond to the high percentage of no-shows when it comes to this supplementary education? So when if ever you respond, I know you can say you are going we will welcome that, but at the end of the day it's one question that we need to be able to discuss it. That's what you know what you want to do.
Thank you.
Yeah, the reason why I'm laughing, Chair, is that we've not followed the tradition, so I can see that I'm not alone, even members are meddling. Okay, midway, you're expected to ask questions of the
group. No, it's something to separate topics.
Yes, but
one thing. As far as the operations plan, we have got three separate steps. They stand alone, three of them.
Three in one presentation.
It doesn't matter. You might have put it in one presentation, but we have got three separate topics. That one I cannot even see up on the screen.
No, I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying, appreciate where the space that we operate in here. Chair, I'm going to request the portfolio. There are basically four questions asked, and the fourth one is related to question one. Maybe the portfolio is important, and the slide will be coming at the end. Fortunately or not, unfortunately, today we are a boys club. Previously, I brought the ladies only, so I'm balancing it out.
Yeah, I think, Chair, the issue of absenteeism has been a cause for concern, because we've observed this phenomenon over the years. And like I mentioned, the no-show or the absenteeism rate has increased from last year. Now, part of the reason for this no-show is firstly lack of preparedness. As much as we've introduced the second chance program, I still think that from the side of the individual learner, he registers for the exam, you know, with the kind of enthusiasm to write. But when he gets close to the examination, he then realizes that he has not covered much ground. And what we need to also understand, Honorable Chair, is the timing of the examination. Learners would have completed their December, and nobody's going to study during December because you haven't received your results. You only receive your results on the 5th or 6th of January. And the supplementary exam begins mid-February. So learners basically got 6 weeks to prepare. And what we need to understand on the book is that these are learners that have performed poorly. So for a learner to perform poorly, he needs a substantial amount of support and intervention to get him to be able to feel confident about writing the exam. So in the main, I would say it's the confidence level of the learner that is a factor that causes them to withdraw from the examination. And I think the next presentation, like you mentioned, Honorable Chair, is a response to the high level of no-shows and how do we address it. I think our big concern is the cost implications of the large percentage of no-shows, simply because you must go print and pack and distribute based on the numbers that have enrolled. And all of that is in fact not utilized. With regard to special school results, we do the full analysis. But obviously, in the case of this presentation, we've just presented the highlight. So we could make the results of the special schools available in terms of the combined picture. I think that covers it.
Yeah. Can I just add one or two things? The first one is that the increase in no-show have moved from 34 to 38, and I want to share a cautionary note on that. In my own analysis, it's proportional to the population. We have the largest group of learners who wrote in 2016, the largest, and therefore that must be seen against that in terms of the number of learners who even qualify for supplementary. And strictly speaking, in my own textbook, it's not out of line, not an out of line, if you look at the proportion of learners. I would say it's within trend. It could be even lower than the previous years if you analyze trends and not just 1 year. And remember that the second chance program was launched last year, and it only took off last year towards the beginning of the year. So these learners would have been the first cohort of learners who would have really benefited from some kind of, you know, decent support that learners would have been provided with. And at the same time, responding to the issue of support raised by Honorable Pasol. And support would have been provided in many ways. Provision of materials, study guides, provision of previous question papers and memoranda, provision of support through particularly your broadcast solutions. Yeah, broadcast solutions. And lastly, and very important, for the first time, some of these learners would have received face-to-face tuition, where else in the past they would have to prepare on their own. So that support is there, and the intention is that, although last year it focused mainly, I think, on 14 districts, but it was not all districts that provided this kind of support. But I'm certain that it would show in those specific districts that it made a difference. So that was about the no-show and support provided to learners, which means that from this year, because the scope has now increased, we've moved from only 4 districts to probably cover the entire country, but strengthen even more the broadcast solution because it's easily accessible, particularly to those schools that are connected and so on, where learners would be able to benefit from such schools. I just thought that I must add those two issues to the response that but as Dr. Poli, a collective word is out. The part of dealing with social, because if you look at it in financial terms, it could also be interpreted as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. If you have such large numbers of members who do not turn up for papers that have been printed, for arrangements that have been made, I mean, in an environment where we are meddling for fiscal resources, it's something that we definitely cannot. But that is not the only variable. That is not the only consideration.
Okay, thank you very much. I can say now the topic, the first one, Honorable Mitchell and Honorable Bosch.
I'm a little confused because you're saying that the no-show is about 34% to 38%. But then on your slide number 4, you show number of candidates in fact and both supplemental examination, 36% to 17, which is 34.6% to 38.2%. Those are the ones that entered and go to supplementary. So I just would like to have clarity on that. And also, okay, I'm not going to go to what you just said now because you're saying the reason why, you know, we are thinking of actually compressing the two, the reasons for that. But I'll leave that for later.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm very perturbed with regard to special needs education. In the same room last year, we were promised that with the next NSC results, this year, it would be available. You can go back and check the minutes. It was a lady, she sat in that chair, cannot remember her surname, and she said it was a shortish lady, makes no difference who it is, check your minutes, said that it was a fault of DBE of not having the results for special learners incorporated into the NEC results, and it would be available this year. It is clear, DG, that we don't feel anything for our learners with special needs. We need to allow the public out there to see how our special needs learners are faring. They might be blind and deaf, have no mental impairment. So their cognitive disabilities, there's nothing wrong with it. So as soon as possible, we need the figures on our learners with disabilities that write the NSC. And then the second question is, Dr. Polio has just said that a learner only has six weeks opportunity to prepare for the second chance matric. But he's been in matric the whole year. So he's had the whole year to prepare, so he hasn't prepared. So he's relying on the six-week program to prepare for the follow-up exam. This is where we have to come in. Sorry, Chair, give me the opportunity. And this is where Honourable Besson also asked, how do we keep our educators accountable? Because that educator should have seen that this child will not even make matric or be ready for the second chance. So we need to get the feedback on where the problem lies, why our children are not ready to write matric. Thank you.
Thank you very much. But I both Honourable Shaw and Honourable Basson. For me, if we say the results for the special schools, I would say the one to see them in the conference, because they are part of this, or we will say we want to see them a clearer analysis, is to say specifically on what is here, this is how the special schools perform. Because I surely believe that they are being incorporated here in this. In the product, I feel I want to clarify that, to say that is how I understand the question that you put in the Let us see the results of the NSC, within these results of the NSC, let us see how the special schools are performed.
Chair, if I may, that was the request last year. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. No, I just wanted that clarity. Can I hand over to you?
Once more, thank you, Chair. We will include them in our presentation, but you'll agree that it hasn't been the tradition. I don't want to dispute what the Honourable Member is saying in terms of the commitment made, and whether I was there or not, and take that commitment, because we will come on behalf of the department. The information is also contained in the technical reports, which is more detailed than the information that we provide. And that is available for the public. And that is made also available on our website. We issue them out when we release the results, and that is also available to the public. But we'll make sure that in future, when we put together the presentation, we deliver in that as a section dedicated for learners. That advice is taken as well as with the teams. The issue of the preparation, I mean, the preparation of learners. Well, Chair, I'm sure your meeting would also agree with us. It's one thing to prepare for the end of the year exams. It's another thing to prepare for supplementary exams. And there are many intervening developments in between writing the final year exams and writing the supplementary exams. As a matter of fact, after writing the end of the year exams, then the system closes and prepares for the result. Everybody goes on holiday and so on. And all of these are disruptors. Learners are not kept within a conducive environment where, even for university, where you are able to study and prepare. And therefore, I would still keep to the explanation that Dr. Polia said, that 6 weeks for learners who are not the strongest of your learners wouldn't be adequate by any education standard. You definitely not be adequate. And therefore, Chair, it also speaks to the next section, as we said earlier on. It speaks to the rationale of making the supplementary exams and the exam that is written in June. And we feel that if you match the two, learners would be exposed to more support, and they are bound to definitely do much better than they would do in some time. It's an observation of years, not only 1 year. Something that has happened over many years. And you must also remember that learners who write supplementary exams are learners who are not in school. They are not in school. These are learners who are out of school. The schooling system has no obligation whatsoever to provide support to them. And that's why we conceived the second chance program, to reach out to these learners who are not in the classroom, who are not benefiting from the support that ordinarily could be provided by teachers.
PJ, I think we need to get into the next presentation, because now even the questions that are asked are overlapping to the possible measure of the two examinations, so that we can take them with the reasons why we even look, think of the possibilities of making the two exam points, so that we will assist our learners at the end of the day. Another question, also.
Sorry, I just want to ask the DJ a question through you. He spoke of face-to-face tuition. Can he give us an exposition of where this face-to-face tuition has taken place and who has benefited from it? Because I'm afraid that our rural children are again being neglected. So a full explanation, exposition on which learners and from which areas have benefited.
Thank you. I want to give the duty, but in this committee, honorable members, we all had presentation on the second chance program and the district where it was piloted. So for me, the question is, they go back to the presentation. We have had it, we do have it in our minutes, we do have it in our reports. But I want to talk to you, you can go back to that presentation that we have taken at this committee. Because we all understand, we all know that we started last year with the 4 districts where face-to-face was happening. What we can hear, what we can yearn for now is to get the full presentation on how it has been more open even to all the corners of the country for this year. But then, DJ, you can go to those 4 districts where you might have been last year.
Chair, we'll provide that information, but you're absolutely right. That the presentation was made containing that information. Correct. On several chances. No, we'll provide the
okay. Thank you very much, DJ. You may continue to the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think just to provide some background in terms of the rationale for the proposed merging of the supplementary examination and what we refer to as the June senior certificate exam. I think, Honorable Chair, just to mention, is that we have two types of public exams which occur at three time points. So we have the November and we have the supplementary, which are both NSC National Senior Certificate examinations. But in addition, we have the June senior certificate examination, which is part of the old qualification, which terminated in 2007 officially for full-time school learners, but on demand, Minister had to extend the offering of the senior certificate examination. We initially extended it to 2011, then to 2014, and based on demand again, we had to extend it beyond 2014. But when we got to 2014, I think the substantive change, Honorable Chair, was where we agreed that we could not continue with the old higher grade and standard grade subjects because they were outdated. And therefore, what we did at that point was to amend the policy so that you still keep the senior certificate qualification with its rules of combinations, but you utilize the national curriculum statement. So in essence, even though this is referred to as a senior certificate examination written in June, the subjects are identical to the subjects written in the November and supplementary. For example, life sciences written in November would be exactly the life sciences paper written in June. In fact, what we do is that during the setting process, all three question papers are set at the same time by the same panel to make sure that we have an equivalent standard in all three examinations. And Uma Lucy also moderates these three examinations simultaneously. Now, what we found and the problems that we've been talking about in terms of the previous presentation is that the no-show and whether it makes financial sense to continue retaining an examination. If there's an examination that takes place almost 2 months thereafter, which is the June examination, which offers exactly the same subject. Now, I think maybe we need to understand, Honorable Chair, what was the rationale for the supplementary exam? The rationale for the supplementary exam was to offer those borderline learners a second opportunity so that they could write as early as possible and gain admission to higher education and continue with their lives. But we have noticed over the years that this original intention is not met. And we have conducted a survey with USAP, and they have confirmed that not more than possibly 5 or 6 learners, due to special Senate discretionary measures, will be allowed in the same year. And these are absolutely special cases. So in other words, all these learners that write the supplementary exam will only receive their results in April, which means that no university is going to keep their space available for them to continue with their studies in that year. And therefore we felt that it makes sense to combine the supplementary examination with the June senior certificate examination. The streamlining of these examinations would simply mean that you now have 2 examinations. You now have an examination conducted in November and you have an examination conducted in June. And both of them will be exactly the same. So 3 are reduced to 2. And we think that no candidate would be disadvantaged simply because the learner will be given a second opportunity. Candidates will retain their SBA and practical mark from the first sitting. And the other policy amendment that we are looking at is to remove the validity period that is attached to SBA. Just to give the members, honorable members, a little bit of background, currently we say that the school-based assessment of a learner is valid for a period of 3 years, which means at the end of 3 years, the learner must redo his school-based assessment. So we think that with this new arrangement, and in order to allow access, the validity period of the SBA could be removed, and therefore the learner will retain the SBA for as long as it takes him to complete the qualification. Now, yeah, my apologies, DG has just reminded me that when we talk about SBA, it's school-based assessment, and it's the 25% which is assessed by the school which contributes to the final promotion of the learner in the attaining of the certificate. But I think this is where the interesting advantage with regard to reconfiguration comes in. We are saying that we need to follow international practice. And international practice says that you need to offer multiple opportunities and we need to allow open access. So we're saying that you will have NSC candidates and you will have senior certificate candidates. They retain their qualification status, but these learners moving forward will now be able to write either the NSC in November or they could write the senior certificate examination. Now remember, we only refer to it as a senior certificate exam because it caters in the main for senior certificate. But a more acceptable nomenclature would be to call one a November exam and the other the June exam, because both exams have identity. So it would simply mean that candidates will register for their qualifications but could write either examination. Now, the important aspect here, Honorable Chair, is that there would be no specific limitation, because currently for a learner to write the supplementary, he must have failed a maximum of two subjects to attain. Now here we say that if a learner has written the November, and if he failed three or four subjects, he will still be allowed to write the June. If a learner got 30% in mathematics, and he wants to improve his mathematics marks, such a learner will be allowed to write the June examination. So we're creating an open system, with granting greater access, but in the first few years, and I will get to the last component and the statement will become clearer, is that part-time candidates will be limited to subjects without a practical component. But this only applies to adult learners who have not been at school. If you're an adult learner and you were at school and you have a practical mark that is equivalent to your school-based assessment, you could take a subject that has a practical component. So that is the second and critical aspect, which is creating an open system, open access for both NSC and senior certificate. The third part of this proposal, Honorable Chair, is that we think that we could discontinue the senior certificate qualification by 2020. Now, again, just to sketch the background, the senior certificate, like I indicated, has been extended from 2008. So if we say we terminate the senior certificate by 2020, it means that learners would have had almost 12 years to complete the senior certificate qualification. That is if they had higher grade and standard grade credits. So it simply means that 2020 would be the last year that any learner who has a higher grade and standard grade credit can utilize that in a qualification which would now be referred to as the senior certificate. So post 2020, which means in 2021, we have only one qualification, and that qualification will be the NSC, the National Senior Certificate. And the advantage here is that the rules of combination will be the same. The only special dispensation that we have to create is that adult learners who have not gone to school previously, and if the NASCA, the National Adult Senior Certificate, or the National Senior Certificate for Adults, which is a qualification that is in the pipeline and that is being finalized, if that qualification is able to kick off by 2020, then there would be no need to accommodate adult learners in terms of the traditional, well, not traditional, but the NSC that I'm currently referring to. In order to accommodate these adult learners, we are saying that any learner that's 21 years and older will be exempt from SBA, because one does not expect an adult learner who has not been to school to now go and complete school-based assessment requirement. So this is a special dispensation, and it will only be utilized if the NASCA is not in place by 2021. Now, what needs to be understood is that it does not mean that if a learner does not take SBA, is in fact advantage. I would say it's a disadvantage, simply because your entire attainment of the promotion requirement is based on a fully placed examination. And we know that through school-based assessment, because you write in short tests, you engaged in assignments and practical work, the chances of the learner demonstrating the competency in these short assignments and assessment tasks, the learner has a greater opportunity of performing better than having to sit for one examination. So it is a disadvantage, but we are saying that we need to follow the principle of irrespective of the route the learner follows. So long as the learner, or the adult in this case, is able to demonstrate the competency requirements of the qualification,
and if he can satisfy all the requirements, then he would be awarded the NSC. Now, in terms of the implementation, and I think I want to emphasize that, that this is still a proposal, it has been presented to the Council of Education Ministers after having been discussed extensively by the heads of department, and CM has approved that this draft policy, this proposal, be published for public comment. So we plan to go out for public comment in the next 2 weeks, and based on the public comment, we will then get a better sense of what is the response of the broader public to the merging and the discontinuation of the senior certificate. If all goes according to plan and policy is finally amended based on the public comment and the decision of the minister, the first merged June supplementary exam will be in June 2019, which then means that 2018 will be the last year of the supplementary examination. The open access that I referred to would be in November 2019, will be the first exam where learners will have open access. Obviously, when I say open access, it doesn't mean anybody. The learner must have, in case of full-time learners, passed grade 11 and satisfied those requirements. I think the open access simply means there would be no limiting factors like in the case of the supplementary examination. And lastly, the senior certificate examination would be offered for the last time in 2020 if the policy is amended. I'm not sure that I should continue given the difference in the focus of the last presentation.
That's what
thank you very much for this. No, Dr. Paul, before I even open up, if you can correct the sentence that she has made, if I heard you, you said the June examination and the November one, they write exactly the same thing. If you can clarify on that one, so we're referring to the standards or what they do, so that.
Yeah.
Because
right.
I could hear when you said it. I had to talk to you and say what I'm saying, but yeah, just clarify that before we even open up.
You're absolutely correct. I meant that the standard is exactly the same. And when I said exactly the same, I was referring to Life Sciences Paper 1. And Life Sciences Paper 1, the paper is the same in terms of the content, but not exactly the same.
And because really that sentence could be interpreted.
Yes.
Oh, you already had a question on that one. I said, I nearly stopped you, but I said, no, let me leave you. I will make sure that you correct that before we take our question. Honorable Majesty, Honorable Baston.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sort of like a little challenged by the fact that, especially you said, there's been an increase. And if I look at your statistics, you're just comparing 2 years. And for that kind of decision to take, you should have some kind of analysis of like 5 years to say, okay, what is the improvement? I'm improving. I mean, if you're saying that you have improved, which you never really responded to my question of asking you the difference of the 34% and 38%, because according to your presentation, the increase, we've seen an increase from 34% to 38%. And also, going back to what Honorable Boston mentioned, if you look at the improvement, you see 100% improvement in Gauteng, over 100% improvement according to the presentation, the slide, number 5, number 4. And Western Cape, you see about 54% improvement from 2016 to 2017. So clearly it shows that those provinces that are well resourced, which likely could be the issue that they had the face-to-face tutoring that were not maybe received in the rural areas. So the argument of saying that you want to stop having the the supplementary in March. In March, it doesn't make sense because it is an improvement. And I would have liked to see like the trend from 5 years to 2017 so that we can really do a clear analysis to say, really, has there been an improvement or is this, are we regressing? And also, I also have a problem with the fact that now you have learners sitting at home for the whole year, June. Literally, you're saying for the whole year that learner will be sitting with grade 11 and doing nothing. You know that we have a problem of drugs, we have a problem of pregnancy, we have a problem of unemployment. So therefore, what are we saying to these learners? Are we totally saying that like their year is wasted? And also, I thought the reason why we had supplementary examination in March was to allow them to have an opportunity to enroll in a university for the second semester, because there are universities that accept the second semester. So what are we saying to the learners? I think we are looking at saving the cost. It's more about saving costs than really looking at the future of our learners. Before we make this decision, we really need to make sure that, like, you know, our learners are not left stranded, because that basically means that for the whole year they won't be doing anything. That is my concern.
Maybe before I go to the go to that slide of improvements, because I'm concerned if we are going to be moving from this point of registry. There are problems with this.
I think, Chair, if I'm hearing the member correctly, the 34.6 to 38 is not an improvement. It's the percentage of learners that did not arrive to write the examination. So in other words, in 2016, supplementary, 40,000 learners did not pitch up to write the exam, and that number increased to 47,000. So that's not an improvement, but it's the number that did not pitch. So, for example, if you look at Kaohsiung, it was 22.4. Number of candidates entered and enrolled supplementary. If you look at the top, it says total number of candidates that enrolled and enrolled. Is that the one we're looking at? Yeah. No, no. If you look at the top, it says the difference between enrolled and enrolled. Yeah. So it's not about improvement. This is the number enrolled. This is the number enrolled. And 34% in the case of 2016 did not apply. And in the case of Kaohsiung, 22 in 2016, 22%, and that increased to 40%. That did not reach. So it's not an improvement, but numbers and percentage that did not reach to apply.
Thank you, Dr. Paul. I just wanted us to go through that so that as we even pose our question moving forward, to clarify that you are the one that was a little bit worried. Honorable Judge Watson, where is the point?
The Chairperson, thank you. I was just asking the question that I just want clarity from the question on the point that Honorable Machine did just address. Are the universities that accept in a contestation? Institution. I said to know, because for me to say that, I appreciate this notion of learning exams, because learners who write exams between February and March from December holidays, and they don't get enough opportunity to prepare themselves for exams. Thus, the no-shows are so high, because learners will come this within 1 month or within few weeks, we have to again to write. This learner, we must remember, has failed the subject in December. That means the learner has no content knowledge of the subject. The learner needs a support. And now the learner, after just the December holidays, in January, they must re-register, and before end February, they start writing. February and March, and those results will come by June, July. And it's that year, that year, most of the learners are already out of the institution that we're supposed to attend. So for me, the notion is giving the program is giving the learners ample chance to build confidence. To test this, I think it's good, so that we see how will be the attendance. Is it going to improve than having 38% of no-show wasteful expenditure? And then I support. As I said to Chairperson, second, I had a question on this same examination. My question was on SPA 25%. Writing seven exams with the learners or the candidates that have no SBA. I just wanted a clarity. Are the allocation of much of this same paper going to differ? Those who are writing a full paper without the SBA will write for the full mark, and those who are writing for 25 there with already having something 25% in the pocket, are they going to write for another mark? How is the paper going to be divided in marks for the future?
Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair. Let's just try and get this sir. If one looks at the overall figures, with regard to the various subjects, there is a drop in the percentage achieved in comparison with the 2015-16 results. If you go to slide 14, accountancy, 2016-17, 69%, 2015-16, 61%. Because of that, I'd like to know, or I'd like to stress that maths and science is one of the, or two of the critical subjects to get bachelor's degree and entrance into varsity or something like that. And with the improvement of 1 or 2 percentage points on against the 2015-16, it is clear that enough is still not being done. We cannot rely on 1% increase over a year, and we have to ensure that we reach the benchmarks that have been set on an international level, because we are way below them. And then what has been done to ensure that we are appropriately training our educators that present these subjects to our learners, and what else has been done to ensure that we lure students to the teaching profession, especially in the fields of maths and science. If you have a look at the percentages of accountancy and economics, we can see a trend, because they're basically on the same level, accountancy, economics, maths, science. It's in the same field. And we need to ensure that we look at these subjects. And then if we go to slide 27. Could I just be, or could an explanation be given on adequate lag time must be allowed for remediation? What is lag time? And then you speak about more emphasis must be placed on strengthening classroom assessment. I wholeheartedly agree to that. But our educators are already swamped with admin. Is this not going to cause an extra load on them? And then if we go to slide 31. I thought we were there then. This is not working. I'm telling you. We should have done the whole presentation and worked through it.
for sure, you can't say we're for coming to this today. It's up to us to understand where we are. So this is the issue we've done. We are for the topic.
All right, I'll start so, with 27 then I'll carry on. Sorry for the...
Thank you.
I just wanted to check on the issue of the land that was saved of the ministry that we related to. To check if they will be granted another opportunity to provide, and given the fact that Dr. Kupia highlighted that similar is going to happen in the kingdom of God, so maybe given the opportunity to all work with the way forward to this dedicated project. And then also if we check that okay, one slide or two in terms of the turnout, in terms of the turnout, do we notice that there are provinces that are doing very well? I wonder if you can highlight for us what is it that they are doing to make sure that the turnout, even though they are the ones who involved and those who turn up that the low capabilities of poor turnout is in the problem. I don't know if you know that you're going to be able to do it. And you can also discuss the question what it is that they are doing, right? And then also just to talk to the issue of the bachelor. I see that maybe you can highlight to us what it is that they are doing about included and was there enough support or what? We look there included and the bachelor chose to be a very consistent in terms of to the number of national babies they achieve, whether it's been the normal again in November or even in the supplemental. Could you please share with us what the problem is? Thank you.
I don't have any questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, maybe today will be the first time where I will need to speak about that. I have long been waiting for this opportunity to hear the person talking about the excuse keeping of time for the general to prepare to this interview. The fact that they've been given an opportunity to write the examination in November and did not make it, it means they were not there. Really prepared the time given to them based on the insufficient. So I just feel that if you take it from March to June, you are giving them ample opportunity to prepare and to go and get necessary support where they are supposed to be getting. I don't see it as a disadvantage because initially the examination was in November. Now we see that they needed more chance. So to me, I do not take it as a disadvantage. I think it's an opportunity for them to further and prepare and get the necessary support. That is why I was indicating to you that I'll be speaking without the question. But to support this proposal by the department, which is from all the
members. Thank you very much, what is even good? The proposal is still going out for public comment. We're still going to get a chance to hear what the public is saying on the proposal. But thank you very much for bringing it to us so that even ourselves, we can start working on the proposal to say what is it that we need for. Because for me, again, what is most important, of which I
I think we must be more open enough to move away from seeing this learner person in going to the university. Other opportunities that our learners are exposed to. I think those are the things that we need to take into consideration when we do that. But also, for me, for us to know when is NASCAR coming into me, what should I say, definition? I think it will answer a lot of questions, and it will answer a lot of things that are arising even in this possible measure of information, because once we have got NASCAR in place, we're not even talking about, you know, these SBAs, SSPs, CS, and so forth. I'm very much interested to know where are we with NASCAR, what is happening, and what is it that we can await from it. Another question that I have, let us say when we are talking of this possible measure of indexation, yes, let us say we move away, we scrap out this supplement, this March examination, go to Kojuni. We need to be practical enough. There are learners, okay, remember, when a learner fails matric, most of the school is not taken in most of the schools. Tend to even talk of the second chance so that the support can be given to this learner for them to be able to perform. He's not making it again in the second opportunity in June. What happens? When does that learner get another chance of writing? I'm not sure whether I'm clear this point. When are we? They did get me.
Yeah.
We are saying we're talking of multiple opportunities for a learner to sit for the examination. Yes, we have set November 2017. Did not make it. Get another chance. Let's say we have scraped our supplemental exam. Get a chance to write in June 2018. It does not make it. When is he giving another chance? You know. Is he going to be sitting for November or another June? So, because at the end of the day, we want to see these learners succeeding. How are these multiple opportunities given to them and for them to be able to build their certificate? But again, DJ, in the presentation, I wish when you come in, you can summarize even this possible measure, why the rationale behind. If I am summarizing it well, mostly you are looking at the support given to the learners as to say, let us not gamble with all these opportunities. Let them sit for the examination where you as a department, you are a little bit sure and confident that they are giving necessary support for them to do better. So rather than giving them 6 weeks, because I think we all agree that most of them, they are not ready. Secondly, do talk to the research or the analysis of what has been happening before that has led you even to come up with this possible measure, because that is what I think even the public out there needs to understand, what might be the rationale behind even the possibility of measurement. Because for me, it shouldn't be just cost. Yes, money will always play a vital role and important. We cannot just make money, but at the end of the day, we always say when you're in education, a learner is always at the center. What is it that you want our learners to benefit from all this? Then after that, really, we cannot run away from the fact that the cost does play part in all this. So, but for us to have a clear understanding and understanding well the rationale behind even coming up with these possibilities, what might be the reasons for that? Thank you very much, teacher.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, thank you very much for your questions. I'm sure, Chair, you'll then allow us to leave the other two questions from Honorable Bosho for the next session, because they relate to the next presentation. Let me start with the questions that you raised, Dr. Pudi, and try to contribute to what the question is. Because I'm trained in history and other things, a bit of history in a situation like this. The National Senior Certificate came into being in 2008, when the National Curriculum Statement came into being. And when we discontinued the notion of higher grade and standard grade. Then the National Senior Certificate came into being, which means we were now discontinuing the senior certificate, which is the old certificate. But because the way systems run, you can't, when you bring in a new qualification, and just because of learners who are outside the system, would still need to continue to benefit until they complete. Now that journey that started in 2008 has been going on, and we have resisted discontinuing the old certificate so that we don't disadvantage learners who are outside the schooling system, who would still want to access right under the conditions of the old qualification or the certification, certificate, if you like. So the real rationale is that it's not only financial considerations. Financial considerations are right, it's one of those. But we are also doing this in the best interest of learners. And you can't have an open-ended system forever. At some point, you need to make sure that there's some convergence and there's harmony within exams that you're administering and the qualification that you're offering. And I've said that we started in 2008, continued with the planning with this. And then it takes me to the trend or the surveys or the observation that we've been making in terms of the show and no show. And by the way, Kumalusi was the first one to raise an issue around the number of no shows of learners who write, particularly the junior exam, particularly the junior exam, let alone the March. Particularly and they then also indicated that there is a need to provide support, because at the core of the challenge is adequate support. Whether you talk much or whether you talk truth, there must be tangible support that is provided to learners. From an educational point of view, we are saying if learners couldn't make it in 12 months on a proportion, it is a bit unreasonable for learners who are not strong enough to expect them still to do well in 6 months. And that is in the best interest of the learner. And we are saying it seems to make sense that we consider a longer duration for support than just 6 months. As I've indicated, in between November exams and the March exam, there are many activities that are taking which actually interrupts, the support that learners should be getting, including a conducive environment for them to be able to study, to prepare, and so on. So I've tried to contribute towards the rationale, and I'm sure Dr. Puglia can add more. Fiscal resources are not the only consideration, but we are saying it is in the best interest of these learners to afford them more opportunities, but to also afford support programs that the department is now providing, which the department was not providing before 2016. We are now saying we need more time to subject these learners to the requisite or adequate support that they need. What happens if learners write in June and they don't make it, then next opportunity, same year, in November. Unlike before, they would have one opportunity. After that, they will then have to write the next supplementary address, which would be the next year. So the opportunities have been increased by two, broken down into 6 months. We believe that 6 months is fairly reasonable for learners to be supported, to prepare, and be able to do well. NASCA, when is NASCA going to be coming in? That's a difficult one. It's a very important question, but unfortunately it sits within the responsibility of higher education and training. We'll have to take it up with our colleagues in higher education and training to respond to this question that you have raised. So we are unable to, with absolute certainty, to indicate when that is going to come into existence. But what we do know is that higher education and training have been working on it to look at possibilities of finalizing qualification for others. Well, Honorable Khosa, I can only say thank you very much for supporting what you are putting forward. I think we're thinking along the same lines, that more time is required to provide support to learners. Honorable Mokoto, KZN, and Gauteng, and probably not only in March and even June, you've got the bars of Gauteng and KZN being the highest, the tallest, if you like. The reason for that is that it's linked to the proportion of learners who are writing exams in this province. They've got the highest number of learners. It does not necessarily mean that, for instance, if you consider percentages, I think Gauteng is around 38 or 37, and then the highest is Western Cape at 40. But if you look at the actual numbers, I think the highest is Gauteng, and then followed by KZN. So it's linked to the proportion of the learner numbers who are writing in those provinces than really actual performance, if you look at percentages. What is attributable to better turnout and better performance? Well, I think you are right. It could be that some of the provinces tend to provide more and better support than others. And now with the coming in of the second chance, coordinating all that provinces are doing, plus the support provided by VBE, that performance should in a way, a bit be even as you look at across provinces, because DBE will be leading the support that is provided to all members. But before the second chance program, I know that provinces, for instance, like Free State, they used to identify learners who are writing supplementary exams, knowing them by name and address, to make sure that they follow them up and they provide support. Now we are saying to the DBE team that's coordinating these efforts that it's your responsibility to make sure that every province knows each learner by name and address, and we follow them up and provide the requisite support. Because in the past, it used to be just the responsibility of provinces taking care of that, until we launched the second chance program in 2016. It's like 14 of Honorable Boshokan, so Honorable Boshok is right. She was drawing our attention to the varied performance of subjects, but Honorable Boshok would still agree with us that accounting is coming in handy. Whether you look at November or whether you look at supplementary exams, the figures look good. But when it comes to math and others, I think we agree with that. There is an improvement, but not big enough. But just to correct Honorable Boshoff, accepting your point that we need to do much better, In terms of international comparison, the national senior certificate is not compared to other certificates elsewhere. And I'm sure you'd refer to TIMS, you'd refer to SACMEC, and so on. But still, you know that we've made a very good improvement for the first time, even with the final result of SACMEC chair, which we'll be receiving with the minister next week in Swaziland. We maintained our improvement at 5% score in SACMEC, which we have reached for the first time. And I'm not saying we have arrived. There's a lot that we still need to do, but we have made an improvement. The fact is we have improved in all international tests, including national tests. Honorable Basson, whether universities, there are no universities that are admitting learners through semester programs and so on, you are right, they do admit learners, but as Dr. Folia indicated, the survey that we have done with the organization that is responsible for universities indicated that those learners are very few and the numbers are almost minuscule, you can say, essentially insignificant. He's giving you the numbers of learners who would enroll at that time, and which does not seem to argue really to retain the supplementary exam that is written much. If the numbers are anything to go by, those numbers don't seem to suggest anything. I request that Dr. Bulia and maybe Mr. Perez.
Chair, I think DG has covered all the questions except maybe just one minor issue which was raised by Honorable Basson regarding the school-based assessment and where adults are excluded from this. I think what we're saying there, Honorable Basson, is that both groups will write exactly the same question paper. The only difference is that a school learner will have the exam mark and will then have SBA at it. While in the case of the adult, he would be resulted 100% based on the examination. But the question paper would be the same in every regard. So the school learner just gets an added component, but it's all brought back to the same maximum mark in terms of the competition.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'm still a little confused because I had actually didn't hear you respond to the issue of the social issues that affect the learners if they're staying at home for the whole year. And also, I just want to find out, okay, when you say that the supplementary exams, you're saying that 62% showed up in 2017, that's according to, if I calculate here, 62% did show up. But now, I would like to find out, you know, what do you expect, like, okay, that is 62 for June, what is the percentage that show up? In November, what is the percentage that show up? So that we're talking about numbers, so that we can literally compare and say, okay, 62 is the lowest, we don't expect statistically. 62 is not bad for me, for show up. But what informs you to say, okay, because of 62 is too low, it's too costly, it's not worth it, let's get rid of it.
Just to give give some information. The no-shows basically in November would be around 15%. From those who say they want to write, and by the time they start to write, it's about 15%. So what you have is the supplementary is going almost to 1.5 times that no-show. But I think on the senior certificate, we tend to be corrected that it's closer to the supplementary exam as well. Now, I think the issue you're referring to about being at home will apply to a child that writes, who's who's in grade 12, who finishes the school year back in 2016, who now writes the supplementary. They're going to remain at home for the rest of this year. If they fail, they're going to remain until November to write again. They will not be, if you've got one subject left, I think, Rufus, you will not be allowed back into the school. You'll have to probably fail all six or seven, six in particular, to be asked to repeat. And some schools have a practice of, I want to use my word carefully, excluding them from coming back. So you have them out in that respect. The other is that in the supplementary, we tried to introduce before, but the examinations team had a different idea that because of the rules for supplementary, it's a limited number that gets an opportunity to write. That's one or two subjects, and therefore when we come with the concept of the multiple exam opportunities, the existing supplementary exam will not allow us to bring that, I want to say, the innovation we want, where even if a child has failed all six and they want to write, then a parent who wants their child to write, then basically that's their right. Then we should be in a position to allow them to. But now the examinations, the rules will not allow them to write in March. But irrespective of that, I think the June exam should have been on a limited time scale and should have been terminated. Even if we stay with the current practice of a November and a supplementary, that is still something that the system will have to look at how to phase out, even if you want to stay with this. So with the proposal that's coming, I mean, we do talk of June, but depending on what the inputs are, your exam could be between March and June. Going any further into July and August, you might as well wait for November. And then to just say that if you're an 18-year-old or a late 17-year-old, you'll probably get about 10 opportunities to write before you turn 21 and have to look at the adult qualification.
Also, I want to say, honorable member, in terms of, are we basing this decision, Jace, just based on 2 years? That's not the case. We've monitored no-shows in the supplementary from the time we had supplementaries. This has been a phenomenon of supplementary exam that you have between 30 and 46 no-shows in the supplementary. And hence, like DG has mentioned, that it has become such a serious problem that it has been raised by the policy as well in terms of no-shows. So it's not based on 2 years, but it's based on an extended trend analysis of the supplementary exam. The other point that I want to make to add to Mr. Priyashi is that in the case of your November exam, your no-shows in the November exam would be based on ill health, would be based on certain circumstances beyond the control of the learner. It could be a death, or it could be some incident that happens that prevents the learner from writing. Unlike in the case of your supplement, where the no-show is simply because the learners are not prepared. So I think there's a difference in terms of this phenomenon of no-show between your November candidates and your supplementary candidates. So therefore, comparing these exams may not be totally accurate if one wants to get. Because your November candidates are learners that are at school, they're supported, and they're all looking forward to write the exam. But a supplementary candidate is your poor performing learner, is given a second opportunity, but he's never sure that he's going to get it.
Okay, you know what? Our session, again, if we can give you a moment, just to come up with something negative of what can we foresee as advantages of this academic process, okay? This is still an ongoing discussion. We are not finalizing this. The department is still going out to hear what other people say. It should even assist from the discussions that we are having, you know. We are just tabulating the advantages of this disadvantage. If you can go deeper for the committee, just finish us with the research that we have done. It will assist us even as we move forward with this discussion and giving to when it comes to an end to the proper resolution the on this topic. Honorable Osho,
thank you very much, Chair.
Mr. Pagliacci didn't go the route, but he sort of half touched on learners that may not write. In my terms, I'm going to call it cunning. I want to know what the department's take is on learners that may not write the trick because they have not done well. In our terms, we call it cunning. Because I know our previous spokesperson did write to the minister on it. He did write to you on it. And we haven't received a response. We've asked for the minister to come and give this portfolio committee a briefing on cunning. And we haven't had a response yet. And it was touched on by Mr. Pagliacci in, not in the words that I'm using, but something similar. Thank you.
I just want to touch on the possible potential rule changes that may come into effect with this merger, because like, you know that with the supplementary exams you must at least be writing up to certain subjects, and then are you going to make amendments or you're just going to edit it on what exists in the
journal of the Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, once more. Well, Chair, it's inevitable, Honourable Mokoto, that the rules will have to change to accommodate the new arrangement, as Dr. Kulia correctly pointed out. There will definitely be change rules, for instance, certain requirements for learners to sit for these exams are needed. If you write supplementary exams, you are limited to the number of subjects that you will be able to offer. But when you combine the two, you will be allowed to write for as many subjects as you would be ready to write. That's just an example. So the rules will definitely change. Honourable Boshoff, the issue of culling of learners, in other words, gatekeeping of learners in certain grades. Well, the policy on progressed learners, among other variables, was induced by that. Number of schools that are keeping learners because they are not fit for purpose. They won't be able to give them the results that they are looking forward to, 100%, etc., etc. And in analyzing the system, we realized that we had the following: high repetition rate, high failure rate, and high dropout rate. And there's a correlation between these three factors. Because they are inextricably interrelated. And therefore, number four, they impact negatively on your output. And ever since we introduced the policy on progressed learners, by the way, which was opposed by many people, the general public, people criticizing us, saying that we can assure you that Elijah is here, he has to take up the brand, people saying, it doesn't apply anywhere except in Africa. When we gave them the facts that the envies of this world, Finland, UK, and many other countries have been implementing a policy that is pro-progression. In other words, learners are retained on extremely exceptional circumstances. Extremely exceptional circumstances, which means that you know, overall, those countries are pro-progression. And the rationale is very simple. It's too costly for any system to retain learners than to progress them, even if they've not met the requirements, but you strengthen your learner support programs to make sure that you bridge the gap that they are proceeding with in the next grade. It was supported by education, economics, and many others. And I'm saying ever since we introduced that policy on the progression of learners, it has reduced substantially the killing of learners, the gatekeeping of learners. And I can tell you that it would be extremely difficult to conclusively say that as a system is still experiencing the notion of the killing of learners, given the fact that schools are now forced to progress learners based on the conditions that are set in terms of the policy on progressing learners. So that's my response to the notion of the killing of learners. Historically, it's been there, but in the last 2 to 3 years, we've decisively dealt with it. And we've received amazing responses from the general public, ordinary members of the public, where some parents even wrote directly to the minister and say, thank you very much, my child would have been kept, my child was progressed, my child passed with these marks, and if not been the policy of progressed learners, my child would have been retained and probably having been discouraged and probably end up as among those young people who will end in learners who are not in employment and not in education.
And just to add, Honorable Chair, is that we are also piloting the inclusive basket, which looks at 7 critical criteria to monitor performance from school to district to provincial level. And one of them is throughput. So it simply means that we now monitor the throughput from school level in terms of number of learners entering grade 10 and number of learners attaining the qualification at grade 12. So that would then assist us if what DGS says, I mean, we're confident that policy and progression is dealing with the issue of culling, but in order to monitor the throughput rate, will certainly help us to identify schools that may still be resorting to some elements of culling in whatever form. But that's going to be extremely difficult through this new approach to reporting.
Yeah.
A short one on the issue of the question that the honourable member had written to the minister. The minister had replied, and the reply was sent to the member, and was also copied to the chair.
I agree to that.
Is it still another problem?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I'm just a bit concerned about the system of Kelly that the Deputy sent. Strangely enough, on the 3rd of May, the Deputy Director General, Dr. Maniki Maboya, said to ask the portfolio committee that many principals are guilty of ESP. And in order to make their pathway appear higher, they would, if learners, it will encourage them to basically, like, discourage them to from writing the trick. But that was in May. That was the 3rd of May this year. So now when you say that, you know, it's not happening, it's very rare, like,
no, I don't remember. I always say when I take things in context, I remember the words of the discussion. We were talking even on the issues of the second chance, the issues of progress. It's because there was the issue of Kevin. Now, really, for me, honorable member, if you just take that sentence without conceptualizing it on what we're discussing, surely we'll end up in various understandings. But if ever we can talk to that, the context we're talking about, it wasn't the report that this thing is still happening. Yes, it is happening, but there are measures in place to circumvent.
On a point of order, Chair.
Yes, honorable, for sure.
If we were given the opportunity of having the minister here to explain to the committee why culling still takes place, we would not be discussing it here. And you cannot say that we are not discussing things in context. We are discussing it in context because the gentlemen across the table from us have said to us, Mr. Pagliacci touched on it, but he didn't use the word specifically gatekeeping or culling. So it is still a problem within the Department of Education that many of our learners do not get the opportunity to write their matric in the year that they are in matric because they haven't done well. So they have to go for the second chance matric, which is unfair towards that learner. If we had all systems running and all systems in place, these learners would receive the education they deserve, and they wouldn't need to go for a second chance matric. That's what we're trying to say. We must stop making nice words and putting all these plans on the table. We must now really get down to the nitty-gritty, because it's not you and I that are suffering, it's the economy that's suffering, and it's our children that's suffering.
Which you know very much well, Honourable Bishop. That is why you are here. That is why you are discussing this thing, Honourable Bishop. But for you to say, if the minister is here, we only send the department to come and account on us on those things. So it cannot be the point of argument. Yes, DG, you may respond, but I had to say that clearly, as to say, the way we choose some of the things, we must always put it in context. I cannot be apologetic about that. You can respond, Honourable Bishop.
Well, I think we've explained in the past, but I'll do that again today. The policy on promotion and progression in the system has always been pro-progression, from time immemorial, from time immemorial, from time immemorial. The policy on promotion and progression has always advocated for progression, that learners should not stay in a place for more than 4 years. It's been there since the time of education. But it was implemented in the general education and training band, but never got effected in the further education and training band from grade 10. Now, the policy on progression was targeting grade 10 to grade 12, because despite the fact that the policy was in place, no effort was made to make sure that that happens. It might be, Honorable Machesi, that Dr. Mabuya was speaking in history and was even speaking in current. Now you've got two policies, policy on promotion and progression, and there is a policy that insists that learners must be progressive. There could be instances where it's not fully implemented. So your observation might be right. But we now have a policy that every official in the system, every teacher and principal in the system should ensure that that policy is indeed. And ever since we implemented the policy on progressed learners from grade 10, that's why you saw even the unprecedented number of learners writing matric exams in 2016. It never happened before. It never happened. It's an effect in evidence of the usefulness of that policy. And in fact, Chair, I could also say to Honorable Bosho, even the increase in the number of learners who are writing supplementary exams is a consequence of that. It's definitely a consequence and a benefit of that. Had it not been of that, some of the learners wouldn't even come out to matric and eventually write supplementary exams. So I wouldn't say with absolute certainty that there is no school where learners are not killed. That I wouldn't be able. I would not be telling the truth because I don't have those facts. The fact that I have is that there are two policies in place that are, among others, targeting that phenomenon. And from what is coming through the system, I'm quite confident that the two policies are keeping to work. I can put my head on the block on that. But to say that every school in this country that is offering further education and training is not practicing, you know, the gatekeeping of learners, it wouldn't be true. But with, as it would happen with all other policies when they are introduced, it takes time for a policy to take full effect for every unit and every level of the system. That's my response to the question, Chair.
Thank you very much. We will be looking up as the development of these proposed amendments and the means with which we can challenge to us today. And also the one that we put in charge of the Chancellor. Honourable members, let us go to the last conversation of the day. Today we are just talking about the NDC. We really want to see, look at the system as a whole, that how is the performance of the committee. We have been very worried about ANA and the developments around ANA. So we are very much eager to hear on how we have handled ANA, because one of the things that you are looking forward to see how even other places are performing going up to great trials. So can I give you this opportunity then to hear about the last presentation?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. In terms of the remodeling of ANA, the format of the presentation would be such that I would first provide a background in terms of ANA, what were the criticisms that were leveled against ANA, and how the remodeling process addresses those criticisms. Now, I think at the time that ANA was stalled, we possibly considered it as a major drawback. And as much as it has been a drawback, I think it has given us an opportunity to reflect on assessment more broadly. And I think what we are now developing is a model that will be more fit for purpose in terms of looking at assessment design being dictated to by purpose. I think we are all in agreement that ANA has generated a wealth of valuable data. But like any intervention in the system, it is bound to attract criticisms as well as positive feedback. And we have taken all the criticisms that have been leveled against ANA very seriously. And I will commence by articulating some of the points and issues that were raised with the implementation of ANA. I think one of the first concerns that was raised by some of our researchers and academics is that we were using a single tool for different purposes. Now, I know that we can argue that any assessment tool can be used for more than one purpose. But however, if you want to get refined and accurate data, it would be more appropriate to have a tool of assessment targeting a particular purpose. Secondly, one of the major criticisms against ANA is that it was being administered on an annual basis, so it did not give the system enough time to be able to remediate. Because the purpose of assessment is that you assess, you then get a sense of what the weaknesses and strengths are, and that then is used as feedback to teaching and learning, and the remediation program must target the areas of weaknesses. Administration across every grade was regarded as an ambitious task, but I think at the time that it was implemented, it was required because it provided a kind of impetus to the system, a momentum whereby every learner, every school was being assessed, and we all know that assessment has a powerful effect. It pulls a performance of learners and schools to a particular target level that you are trying to get to. But where I think, and possibly this is an issue with any system, that the effective utilization of the ANA data by schools was lacking. Now, when we implemented ANA, we had to focus on
effective administration. We had to make sure that the standard of the instrument was appropriate, and we also had to take care of the utilization of data. And I think that we were moving in the right direction in terms of harnessing the utilization of the data, but we didn't get to where it needs to be in terms of making every teacher fully competent in analyzing the data that comes out of ANA and being able to utilize it in his classroom practice. Our teacher development program have utilized the data, but possibly not as intensive as they should have in terms of promoting teacher development. And I think this was one of the issues that was raised by the union. The other question that was raised, if ANA was diagnostic, then why is it administered at the end of the year? Because you and I are aware that if you're conducting a diagnostic assessment must be done on a continuous basis at the level of the classroom so that the teacher gets a sense of whether learners are progressing towards the desired outcome. I think ANA also had an unintended consequence where there was a proliferation of standardized and control tests across all levels of the system. And this obviously contributed to some kind of an overload. There was also the one point that was made that we are spending a large budget in terms of administering the ANA across all school, across all learners, but why is it not used for the purpose of promotion? Now what I want to say, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, the reason I'm pointing this out is that we've taken each of these items that have been listed as criticisms and we've tried to factor that into the new model, and I'll try to point that out as I move on. In looking at the criticisms and in looking at the process of redesigning a new model, we came up with certain basic principles, which are in fact principles of good assessment. And one of the first principles was that the purpose of assessment must determine design. So you don't just assess for the sake of assessing, but you understand firstly why you want to assess, and then design the instrument, design the administration process, and design how that data will be utilized. We also, as a principle, are saying that where assessment matters the most, assessment at a systemic level is important, but assessment at the point of teaching and learning, at the classroom level, when the teacher is sharing the information and the knowledge and involved in teaching and learning, that's when assessment is most important. Another important principle is that if one is looking at systemic assessment and looking at the health of the system, it may not be necessary to focus on every grade, because the way the curriculum is structured, that we look at certain strategic points in the system, which is the end of the phase. So there should be a focus on end of phase assessment. The issue of adequate lag time. I think adequate lag time simply means do not assess the system on a continuous basis. Give the system an opportunity to remediate. Give schools and districts an opportunity to understand what the areas of weaknesses are and to develop appropriate program that will target those particular areas of weakness. There must be effective school support, and I think even in the previous presentation, support is of paramount importance. Obviously, in this case, it's support based on the information that you extract from the assessment. There must be capacity building, and I think we spoke about training program. Learning assessment must be linked to contextual factors. I mean, in a country as diverse as ours, Honorable Chair, one cannot look at the performance of a school out of its context. And therefore, we are saying in the new model, contextual data is going to play an important role. I spoke about the overload issue, and national assessment must be designed in the context of all other forms of assessment. And I think this is important. so that you don't look at your national assessment program as an entity on its own, but see how it fits into the broader picture of assessment across the entire landscape of education. Now, very quickly, Honorable Chair, this is what our current assessment landscape looks like. And there are three basic pillars of assessment. It's exams, and I think as a country, we've done extremely well with regard to examinations, and in fact, we have been told by reliable sources from academia that our examination systems compare to the best in the world. So we've done a lot in terms of taking our examination system to where it needs to be. I think an area which we are still making progress, but we still have a long road to traverse, is school-based assessment, simply because it's conducted by every teacher in the classroom, and every teacher needs to be competent in terms of conducting, designing the assessment. And the last link, which is possibly the focus of this presentation, is national assessment. But national assessment must be looked in the context of your regional assessment studies as well as your international assessment studies. And here, I'm referring to your SACMEC, your TIMS, and your PERF. But one cannot depend on just your international studies, because international studies obviously have a particular priority, and they're looking at international comparability in the main. And therefore, there's a need for every country to have its own national assessment program to look at what and how is the system performing in terms of meeting certain national imperatives. And we as a country have specified national imperatives in terms of numeracy and literacy, which we want to monitor very closely. But I think the other very important point, Honorable Chair, is that the National Assessment Program, or ANA, was critical in setting a standard at the GET band level. Now, you and I know that now, or currently, we look at the public examination system of 12 or 13 years as being the benchmark. And it's too late to expect to have a national benchmark after 13 years. So you need to have earlier warning signals to the system. And therefore, we think that with the absence of ANA, we now do not have those benchmarks at the end of the foundation, intermediate, and senior phase. So having said all of this, Honorable Chair, in terms of what the limitations are, what are the principles that will be followed, what then becomes the new model for national assessment in the country? I think the first point is that we're looking at a three-tiered model. And the three-tiered model comprises of systemic assessment, summative assessment, and diagnostic or formative. Now, just to give you an overview, systemic assessment is there to measure the health of the system, and it gives you a sense of how the education system as a whole is performing. It is not specific to a school, it's not specific to a district, we're looking at the system as a whole. And therefore, one thinks that an appropriate model would be to assess grades 3, 6, and 9, and this has to be done once every 3 years, because it links up with what we pointed out earlier, that there needs to be lag time for the system to remediate. And very important with regard to the systemic assessment model is that it's sample-based. You don't have to measure or assess every learner. A representative sample will be able to give you a very reliable indicator of how the system is performing. The second tier, Honorable Chair, is what we are calling summative assessment. It could also be referred to as summative examination. Now, the difference between the systemic and the summative is an examination for all intents and purposes. It simply says that as much as you have a systemic assessment, which is telling you about the performance of the system as a whole, there's a need to measure the performance of every learner in certain selected subjects so that every learner in the country is given an indication of how he or she is performing against a national benchmark. And what we think is that for the purpose of South Africa, we could start with a summative examination in just two subjects, possibly mathematics and languages in grade 6, which is a relatively stable grade. But obviously, our target is to take it to grade 9. So we get a sense of how our learners are performing in math and in literacy after 9 years of teaching. So every learner gets assessed, and this can happen every year. But what we think can be done is that, given the fact that every learner is assessed, that it's going to be based on the current curriculum statement, that the results of your summative exam could be used for the purpose of promotion and progression. So it's not a wasted effort. The money spent, it also relieves the teacher in the classroom of setting this examination because it's now set nationally. But we need to then decide on where the marking takes place, and obviously marking that takes place in a centralized manner has its own cost implications, which I'm not sure the system can accommodate at the moment. But we think in the initial years, the marking can still be done by teachers in the classroom after having had a national memo discussion so that there's agreement on the marking guideline, and we can bring in strong moderation mechanisms which will guarantee to a very high degree what the quality and the standard of the marking is. So that's the summative exam component. And the last component is the diagnostic or formative, which, like I said in my initial list of principles, that our focus must be on the classroom. And I think this is what the diagnostic or the formative does. It focuses on the teaching and learning in the classroom. So in essence, what will happen here is that the department will provide our teachers with good, solid, pre-tested exemplars of assessment tasks, which teachers can then use as and when they think it's necessary. And it would be used to measure the performance at the end of a learning area or a topic or at the end of a quarter, as and when. And there are a number of ICC platforms that could be used to make the data available. Learners could take it online. It could even be marked online. So we think that these three tiers are in keeping with international good practice, and it's certainly the way to go. Now, the rest of the slides, Honorable Chair, goes through each of these in more detail, and I'm not going to go through every slide. I'll just focus on some of the critical elements which I've not touched on. I think in terms of the systemic evaluation, the one criticism was that we were comparing performance from one year to the other, but it was not based on a confidential test. In other words, if you want to look at your 2016 cohort versus 2017, the best method would be to have the same test written by successive cohort. So therefore, we are saying that in systemic evaluation, we'll have a test that's constructed, pre-tested, but the items will be kept confidential. In the main, almost 80% of the items will be used from one year to the other. So therefore, it's critical in terms of who administers the test. Because the administrator administers the test and collects the test so that none of those tests are left lying around or gets into the hands of learners and teachers. In conjunction with the test itself, there would be questionnaires, and the questionnaires will focus on the teacher, on the learner, on the school, and the school environment, so that you understand that for these schools that were part of the sample, what is the community factors and what are the environmental factors that are impacting on performance. And the test administration is sample-based, so it would be administered by an agent that is appointed for this purpose, so that you keep the independence And also there's uniformity in terms of the way it's administered. And we think that in the case of the systemic evaluation, we should appoint an independent, competent agent to be able to administer the test, collect the data, analyze the data, and report independently. So that gives credibility to the report that would then be received by the minister. And you could have reports at the different levels. The diagnostic, I think I have expounded on that quite at length. But just to say that in the case of your diagnostic performative assessment, it's low stakes, administered by the teacher, marked by the teacher. There is no school report or district report. There's no consolidation of information at district and provincial level. It's about the teacher and the success of his teaching within the context of his classroom. So it's very personal, private, and it helps the teacher and possibly the school principal to get a sense of how is this class or this group of learners performing. And not just as a group, but you're looking at individual learners and what their problems are. And I think this diagnostic also assists parents, because they get a report on how their son or daughter are performing in terms of specific areas of the curriculum. And we're saying that diagnostic tests can also be structured in such a way that depending on the response that the learner provides, you can actually pinpoint. And multiple choice works very well in this context, where depending on the distractor that the learner chooses, you are able to get a sense of where his area of misconception or misunderstanding lies. Then moving on to the summative, and I think this is the one that possibly needs more discussion and consultation. Obviously, because it's a national examination, the question that is sometimes raised is, are we bringing back, the concept of a public examination back to the GT band? And I don't think that we are transporting the model of public exam, but we are targeting specific subjects. But also I think what we need to say, Honourable Chair, that there has been a lot of discussion about having an exit examination. I don't want to call it an exit exam, but a formal national examination after 9 years of teaching and learning. And whether this model, which starts with grade 6 into subjects, moves to grade 9, could then finally become a fully fledged examination at grade 9. But the format and structure of this particular exam can be teased out based on what we think is most appropriate. And therefore, this is all part of a proposal which still needs further consultation and discussion in terms of the nitty-gritty and the detail. Now, having outlined the three tiers, we then have an implementation plan. And we think, Honorable Chair, that over the next 3 years, 2017, 2018, 2019, we could move a considerable distance in terms of entrenching some of the basic elements and components of this national integrated assessment framework. For example, already we've developed diagnostic test items. We've done some pre-testing and we are ready to distribute them. And they could be used by schools already. We hope to get onto an electronic platform, which we are currently piloting. And the platform that we're currently piloting is called TAMI, but this is an acronym for Teacher Assessment Resources for Monitoring and Improving Instruction. And it's a useful tool. It provides the teacher electronically with a repository of these high quality items, and the teacher can then build the test and learners can take it online, and it can even mark multiple choice questions online. But it's something that's being developed. In fact, the pilot will be done in two provinces in the third quarter. The summative, we've developed summative tests and we will be piloting those tests this year as well. Systemic, we've also developed test items that could be used for systemic and those are also being piloted. So as much as the model is being finalized, Honorable Chair, there's a lot of work that's being done, and we believe that we could continue with the piloting of the summative as well as the systemic in 2018, because the one value of piloting an item is that you get a clear indication of how learners respond and what the interaction produces in terms of this particular test item, and you can tweak the item based on the learner response. So what CM has approved already is that we could administer the first systemic assessment in 2018, which is as early as next year. The systemic assessment, I think, is urgently needed because that provides you with a sense of how we're doing as a system. And the last ANA was administered in 2014, so 15, 16, 17, we have data coming from TIMS and PIRLS, SACME, but we don't have our national assessment. So it's not like we've had a void, but it would be good to have a national systemic assessment which could give us a clear indication. So that's the implementation. Now, very quickly, the reason the ANA was halted was because of union concerns. So therefore, a task team has been established with the unions, and we've worked over an extended period trying to find the best fit in terms of a model for the country and a model that is acceptable by all. And in this slide, I give you a sense of all the unions that are involved, the number of engagements that we've had, which have been very intense, but also extremely beneficial. And I think that we've moved very close to each other, and I can say that the unions support the systemic assessment model. And what we're currently doing at the moment is wrapping up on the final implementation details, and we've been given the deadline of the end of June to be able to put in all the final details with regard to systemic assessment. In terms of summative, I think that's where unions have concerns about the summative exam, and their concerns relate to the fact, are we now allowing for the system to be dominated by examinations? And I think that's an area that we are still busy in engagement with. With the diagnostic, they support it in principle, except they want to make sure that there's not going to be a proliferation of assessment in our classroom. So those are the areas that are being dealt with by the unions, but we should finalize the entire model with the unions by the end of July. Thank you, DC. I thought that the systemic was end of June and the full model was end of July. Okay. My apologies, it's end of June. We also had a round table, and I think from the round table there were a number of significant suggestions coming from our experts, and I think all of them are communicating one message: to focus on assessment in the classroom and make sure that you develop the capacity of your teachers to develop, to be able to develop appropriate assessment tasks. Our next task, our next steps, which I think I've clarified and reflect the date of July. And maybe just to say in conclusion that ANA has created a vacuum, and we are in the process. Although it has not created a total vacuum, but I think there is a need for an alternative, and the systemic, which would be implemented by next year, certainly will play that role. The summative and the diagnostic are part of our current curriculum and assessment policy. So it's nothing new, it's merely formalizing it and presenting it in a more structured and institutionalized format. I think I'll stop there.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cole. That's about the thing that we always talk about again here. to put Mr. Remark in the home of our commission here today. Honorable members, members of the delegation, Mr. Remark, the government, can you switch off your mic?
Yeah, thank you very much. Honourable members, let's open up for the engagement, the comments, the questions on the remote of finance.
In other words, Anna is coming in. It's just been remote. And as you say, you are starting with piloting and you are moving close to each other with other stakeholders. But you mentioned that the unions only agreed with the systemic summit. That means with the other two concepts of this assessment, you have not agreed yet. But we carry on with the pilot. The piloting. How? I'm worried about continuing with this pilot, whereas we have not yet reached consensus with other stakeholders. Are we not going to create a situation whereby we drop what is good or what we think is good because the other third party is not buying what we are selling? Because my problem is that the unions are the implementers because of the teachers. They are the implementers. If we have not yet agreed, how sure are we that you just another word, testing and assessment? Is it not to say we are adding a lot of work on the teachers by lots of these assessments, although you say it's for special grades, exit grades? Are the teachers ready for implementation of this? Are there any costs that are going to be occurred by implementation? And you said you are ready. How ready is the system in terms of implementing this concept? How ready is it as the system for this? It's already on the pipeline. Let me stop just saying thank you to me.
Thank you, Chairperson, and of course, thank you, Dr. Pato, for the presentation. In slide 28, you spoke of capacity building. When will this capacity building of practitioners take place? And what is its time frame? Will it be an ongoing process or a once-off process? The other issue I wanted to raise, what are the plans, Chairperson, to avoid the assessment overload, as indicated there, and to further check it to what are the serious issues identified that need to be avoided as overlord. And that's the chair. By when is the department going to implement to the fullest the issue of teacher pupil ratio as one of the serious challenges, more especially in rural schools? Thank you.
The first question that I have, is to check with the department whether they have already incorporated the proposal of the union and other stakeholders in the remodeling. And then the other point is the issue of quality assurance. How have you dealt with it? How have you ensured that the assessment does not lose its intention? And then I see there on the presentation chapter 3, where the unions are saying that they don't like summative assessments because they resemble, and what is it that they were talking about when they talked to that? Because in my view, I view ANA as part of the teaching program, it's strengthening the teaching program. So I just wanted to get clarity on that one, Shabbat. And then there is somewhere where you talk about the outsourcing, the independent agents. What is it? Is that but I think the presentation on its own Shabbat for me is okay. And then maybe the last point is the issue of the training of the teachers. Because if you check on the, when you were making the presentation, you said that sometimes even the teacher development programs do not use ANA, ANA results to effectively improve the results. And that we also noticed when we were going to schools on oversight. When we ask them about the ANA, they do ANA okay, fine, they comply. But at the end of the day, they don't know how to translate the result into better, use so that they can produce change in the manner in which they teach and in the way they approach the learners. At times you find that learners, even if they failed the ANA in ANA, they continue to fail in the subsequent exams. So I just wanted to check how are you going to really deal with that part of teacher development, especially empowering them to use this new framework data. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just some clarity. We speak about the systemic evaluation being finalised by end of June, and then a task team has been granted until the end of July. What is this task team? And is it until the end of July or is it June? And then I would just like to say with a tongue in the cheek, I can understand why the systemic evaluation has been adopted by all unions, because it's a proven record in the Western Cape that it works. Thank you.
And second that. Thank you. I just wanted to follow up on one of the questions that has been asked, specifically on the teacher ratio. But it was the Honourable Member said in the rural areas. I would like to know what is the national teacher ratio that we have, like a teacher lender ratio. Thank you.
Thank you very much. For me, it's a combination of what we have in the system, like IQMS, version of Anabino models, training of teachers, development of teachers themselves, involvement of districts to support the school, because I think at the end of the day that's where we want to go. But if there is no coordination, for me, to get into a school, to get a report from the district or whatever departmental official on ANA. But when you get a report on IQMS, yes, I know we're assessing two different things, though they're not different. The performance of a teacher and the performance of a learner. You find that in the IQMS, the teacher is scoring, what is the highest level of IQMS? 5, 4. But when it comes to the outcome, the learner outcome, it does not talk to such. How do we coordinate all these instruments that we have? Because even IQMS for me is there, it's one measure of the system. So that these things can talk, these instruments that we have can talk to each other, and at the end of the day, we want to assist the learner, because as it is, really, I don't see any collaboration in
the coordination of the instruments that we have, just to give us a picture of what is happening in the system. And with the teacher training that you are talking about in your presentation, I think that should be good. Worse when it comes to the utilization of these results that you are talking to, I think it will assist a lot. On the three spheres that you have talked about, Dr. Ponte, this other one for me, what is it? The summative one. Are we in any way looking at a sort of an external examination at the end of grade 6 or grade 9? From the presentation, I just want to understand where it is. Are we saying it should take the form of an external examination that you're giving to? But will be administered by the teachers themselves, because if our learners should take part at the end of the year will be resultant, what kind of exam are we looking at when it comes to that? But otherwise also let me welcome the presentation. I think if ever there is an agreement with the stakeholders, it's one of the instruments that is going to take the system forward. Maybe you can just give us that assurance as to the way we are when it comes to that. If ever we are planning that this plan should be kicking in as from next year, I think we need to know how far the task team, there is the task team that has been working on this, and yeah, what are the agreements, and are there any challenges that you foresee moving forward when it comes to this one of the instruments that you just presented to us?
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, let me start, the two colleagues will fill me in. Well, Chair, my entry point will be your concluding statement, almost to say we've been working over 2 years, and this is the progress that we have made so far. It's been an exciting journey, but at times very painful. Such is the nature of the journey that involves role players such as the ones that we have given a report on. There is convergence in systemic assessment. A lot of work has been done. The team will be giving us a report tomorrow at 1 or 2. There's a meeting of principals. In other words, principals, senior officials of unions, and myself will be getting a report from the task team. And the task team, Honorable Boshoff, is the team that was put together, constituted by members from unions,
and officials from the department, from curriculum and development in the main to deal with these issues that Dr. Polia has presented a progress report on. So that team will be giving us a report. We met with them, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in May, end of May, and that's why I insisted on the deadline of June, because when we met in May, we've said to them in no uncertain terms that end of June, we want them to give us a complete report. In fact, we'll talk about June, July, when I was too sure, because the understanding from Dr. Polia seems to be that they understood to be a suggestion that the completion of systemic assessment must be done by June, but I still keep to the initial agreement, because our initial agreement was all 3 legs must be completed by June. What comes out in tomorrow's meeting will communicate to you in due course. So work is still continuing in the diagnostic and summative assessment. And even there, in the other two last legs of the framework, Dr. Polia has indicated what are the concerns, what are some areas of agreement. But I think we are much closer than we are. We are much closer at the moment than we were 2 years ago. Because 2 years ago, you wouldn't even imagine an agreement on a systemic assessment, which is actually the assessment that will start from 2018. Summative assessment, is it an external exam at the end of grade 9? Yes, Chair. For grade 6 and 9. For now, for grade 6 and 9, for mathematics and language. It's highly probable that it could usher in the issuing of the GEC certificate. Now, the founding documents of this country, of our democratic dispensation, right from the RDP, talked about the GTC. In other words, at the end of grade 9, there should have been a certificate that is issued after the administration of public exams. Policy of this government before 1994 and after 1994. In other words, discussions leading to 1994, if you remember where the RDP comes from, because it really started before 1994. It's in policy documents that at the end of grade 9, there must be public exams, and then there must be you know, the issuing of this certificate. It's just that the appetite has been very low, and I have presided over structures that are structures that didn't have the requisite appetite to implement the public exams at the end of the time. I'm just responding to that, Chair. Teacher training, and again, I think Honorable Basson raised the issue. It's not only about teachers' ability and capacity to use assessment data. It's about the whole system. There's a poor culture of the utilization of assessment data, even for parental support. Assessment, you know, the learning outcomes are an important proxy that can bring in a host of interventions, including from parents, determining the extent to which parents are able to provide support to their own children. That's what assessment data will be able to do. Assessment data will also give us a sense of the state of our administration in providing support to schools. Because the impression should not be created that it's only about teachers, it's about the whole system. It's really about the whole system. And I'm therefore admitting that we don't have a requisite culture of the utilization of assessment data. And assessment data can even help oversight structures such as yourselves as to what are the areas of weakness. That's how vast the utilization of the assessment data can be. Can even use to inform public opinion.
can even be used by the media to communicate certain information to the general public. So we are trying to entrench that culture of utilizing assessment data to the required level, if you like. Chair, I agree with you. Coordination of what we are doing in the system in terms of you know, assessment of educators in the form of IQMS and so on, and other interventions, and therefore this new regime, this new framework would require that we strengthen our coordination mechanisms. And again, I must say, you know, whether it's about the assessment of educators or assessment of principals, we never recognized learner performance as an important proxy about the performance of the system. In other words, people would be assessed on everything else except for learner assessments. So learner assessment or learning outcomes have no impact in determining the performance of those who are responsible for providing education in the system. The QMS, one cardinal outstanding attribute about the QMS, which will soon be concluded, is that learning outcomes are now at the center of the radar of assessing all those who are providing education in the system. And that has not been the case. And the history of what led to that, I'm sure you all know. I wouldn't venture into that. Honorable Machesi, the National Learner Teacher Ratio, the PDG responsible for planning will give you the exact figures, and I'm sure he'll explain that later. Honorable Boshoff, I've explained the task here, and I hope we are on the same page. Yeah, end of June, end of July, I also explained that. That we take in 16 tongue-in-cheek. Honorable Boshoff is reminding me that it was just tongue-in-cheek.
No, it was actually true. I was just testing the ground there.
Remember, Honorable Boshoff, that systemic assessment was started by the National Department as early as 1996. For grade 3 and grade 6, so my institutional memory is really good. So it's not necessarily the invention of a particular province. We also learned this from other countries. And having participated... I thought that you represent the whole country, at least as a Honorable Mokoto, proposals from unions, have they been incorporated into the new framework? Although the process is not concluded as yet, but I'm sure you can see how things are unfolding. The proposals, not only by unions, even experts in education such as, I think, Dr. Nick Sports and others who participated in the roundtable discussion, experts from other universities, those inputs have been incorporated into this new model that we are sharing with you. Honorable Mokoto, I've spoken to the issue of teacher training, the utilization of assessment data, that I accept as a flip side, as a weakness of the system. If we can get to a stage where we fully appreciate the utilization of assessment data, I think will come very close to be on par with the rest of the world in terms of improving learning outcomes. And I want to emphasize, not only for teachers are key, because they determine what happens in the classroom, but including those who support teachers in the classroom, appreciating the utilization of data to inform the nature of the support that we provide to teachers. Outsourced to an independent agent, Honorable Basson, it was for the credibility of the assessment, and in particular this has to do with the clinic assessment. That will be outsourcing to an independent agent that will be able to administer and report almost independently. Because if we do it ourselves, people will say, no. They are creatively, produce these results, and therefore they are not authentic, they are not credible, etc., etc. And it's also consistent with international best practice. PISA is administered by the OECD. OECD, which is an independent body that does assessments of various kinds and so on. So it's consistent with international best practice. The issue of summative resembling ANA. The reason why some people have got concerns about summative assessment is because it would be administered every year. Remember what Dr. Polia said. He said one of the major criticisms was that you don't increase the mass of your ox by putting it on the scale every day. To speak loosely, people say you don't fatten the ox by weighing it every day. And that's what very strong view held by assessment practitioners, to say that you assess, then you have 4 times for remediation and for capacity building, then you come back. Just like your medical
checkups.
Yeah, you get the medication, you don't go to the doctor every day to take your medication. You know, something of that sort. Yeah, the proposals from unions have been incorporated. Honorable Khosa, capacity building, part of the capacity, there'll be 2 phases of capacity building. The first phase is for the readiness of the system to implement. The second phase will be ongoing as part of enhancing the utilization of assessment data. That's how we have planned this and want to make an enormous investment in this as part of teacher development programs. So I've answered, is it once off, is how often is it going to be? What are the assessment overload issues? Well, they relate to what Dr. Bulia explained, the proliferation of assessments. Chair, you'd recall that in some meetings they said you've got ANA, and this is our history now, not now. You've got ANA, you've got PANA, you've got DANA, you've got KANA. Yeah, you see, at national level is ANA, at PANA province, at district level is DANA, at second level is KANA. And teachers said, this is just too much. It's now the tail wagging the dog, which should be the other way around. Assessment must just be a feedback loop, a feedback mechanism to determine whether learning and teaching has happened. But in some levels of the system, it was used almost for nefarious intention, for what it was not intended for. So those are the overload issues. Reducing learner-teacher ratio, Mr. Padayaki will speak to that, and I'm sure you'll see that the ratio has fairly improved. Chair, how ready is the system to implement? As far as we have gone, we are now ready. We've set time frames in terms of what needs to happen before the actual implementation happens in 2018. Are there any costs? The costs are within what is allocated in the budget. Are the teachers ready? For systemic assessment, I can say that after the pilot, which is planned towards the end of this year, teachers will be ready. At any rate, they've been participating in SACMEC, they've been participating in CHIMPS. And they participated in PILS. And by the way, Chair, towards the end of this year, we'll be getting results on PILS. So we'll be ready to come back and give you results on PILS. is a finality about two aspects of the assessment. Honorable Basson, I thought I explained that. Systemic assessment, I can say we are 99% done. But with summative and diagnostic, the team needs to go back and finalize its work there. And we'll get a full report tomorrow, as I've indicated earlier on. Is Anna coming back? Is it just the reincarnation in the form of the new model? Not at all, Honorable Basson. It's a new creature altogether. You can see that Anna was a creature that probably had only one leg. This new creature is conceived or conceptualized to have at least three legs. So, Honorable Chair, this question is asked by Honorable Machesi, who I expected Honorable Boshoff and Honorable Basson. I thought that you know the three points. The three-legged pot. The 3 foot. Yeah, three-legged pot. So it will actually relate more and better with people in the rural areas than in the urban areas, because they wouldn't know the three.
Just to give to respond to the learner educator ratio, in 2016 it was 35.7 learner to educators, and that was for educators paid by the state, and when you add the educators paid by SGB, that drops to 32.5. This is from our In the School Realities in September 2016. 2 months time will release the 2017 figure. And if you want to reduce the learner educator ratio, that will have an impact on the compensation of employees' budget. The current policy is not encouraging any real reduction. In fact, we need to reduce the educator component, but that is as a last resort.
I will
come
to you,
Honorable
Bishop. I just want to make a follow-up. I've been listening to the MC for my life recently. I think it was Friday morning or Thursday morning, SAFM, talking to the issue of the teacher ratio. How flexible the promises, the flexibility of the promises, because one thing, she was talking on the issue that we discussed last week, the last time we met in the committee. On the challenges that Mpumalanga is having worse on financial issues. One thing that she raised there was the fact that they spent more on compensation because of the pupil-teacher ratio, which is 30. And to say, my question is to the flexibility of the provinces to be out of the national guidelines, as we are saying. If ever the province is saying they are not with the 30, and it's definitely affecting the running of this budget, as we have all been complaining and been reporting to. And she confirmed that, and she said one of the issues that they are starting to work on is the issue of the ratio, teacher ratio, of which they are still standing. So how can you guide the province, and what assistance can the province get when it comes to that? Because if it is not attended to, we'll continue to have Mpumalanga and other provinces, maybe that you are not sure of, faced with the same situation as we see Mpumalanga facing the challenges of now. Or else, maybe DJ, before you even respond, because it might be a follow-up again, Honorable Boshoff and Honorable Machesi.
Yes, please. Thank you, Chair. Speaking about Mpumalanga, in the beginning of the year, when I did oversight in one school, and I'll give you the name, Mashishing High, grade 8 learners, between 60 and 80 learners to a class. It is impossible for a teacher to teach property to learners of that magnitude. And we cannot keep on placing the burden on the SGBs, especially in the Qatar 1 to 3 schools, because the SGBs just don't have the money to pay teachers out of their own pocket or the bit of transfers that they get from the department. So I know for a fact that the Mpumalanga Education Department budget has been cut to the bone. So we need to find avenues and assistance, not only to Mpumalanga, the other people can speak on their provinces with regard to assisting our teachers and our learners in cutting the sizes of our classes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I just wanted to go back to actually the question as well to say, okay, you have a national teacher-learner ratio, but then if you have to look at the provinces, like the rural areas, especially like in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, what is the ratio there? I think that's one of the questions that was asked. And also if school rationalization could also be another way of combating the issue of school, what's considered the ratio between learners, because I think that is very very pertinent in rural areas. So I just want to find out, like, you know, if you look at that, and also your organization will bring a difference in that, and what are we going to do with the surplus of teachers that are going to come up with realization. I know I'm bringing up a different topic now, but it is in relation to the ratio, the learner teacher ratio.
Yeah, it goes back to the old argument that you already said of the teacher learner teacher ratio vis-a-vis the front-based business school. Yeah, I think whatever we're discussing now goes to that.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Honorable Machesi, what happens, let me say, I think you absolutely spot on. The rationalization of schools will help. I know the Minister said in when she delivered a speech yesterday at the NECT dialogue, that in the Eastern Cape, for instance, there's close to 2,000 schools out of 3,000 schools that are far below the threshold of 135. We are saying a viable school should be, the minimum should be 135, right? But a number of schools in the Eastern Cape fall far below that. Which means, Honorable Machesi, if you merge them, then you'll have a bigger pool of teachers. Remember, learner-teacher ratio is determined by the number of learners divided by number of posts or teachers in a school. Yeah, then it gives you learner-teacher ratio. So surplus educators can be placed, but it will give you a favorable learner-teacher ratio, which means that it will reduce the number of learners against teachers, because the number of teachers increase, and when it increases, then when you bring learners together, it becomes much easier to teach in an environment where learners are more. And let me make this point again. A favorable learner-teacher ratio, as you correctly pointed out, will always be difficult for rural provinces. Rural, sparsely populated provinces. The last time when I checked in, Mr. Padayaki will confirm this. There are two provinces that probably have a high learner-teacher ratio but are doing fairly well. It's Gauteng and Western Cape. And the reasons are fairly easy. Gauteng is closely dense. You don't travel more than what? 100 kilometers from one point to the other, or at the most 150 of Gauteng. When you have to travel close to 600 to 800 kilometers in Northern Cape, you know, from one point to the other. So what it means is that for rural provinces, a favorable learner-teacher ratio will always be a problem because of sparsely populated schools serving various communities in the rural areas. Because it's extremely difficult even to close all of them. For as long as human beings are there, you need to provide services, and one of those services is education. So, which means that for rural areas, it's not always possible to increase the level, to get a favorable learner-teacher ratio. And that's why I've given an example of Gauteng and Western Cape. Although they don't have exactly the same dynamics, but more or less are deemed to be affluent provinces and that are more or less managed. So rationalization will help there. Having teachers in surplus will help to redeploy them much more meaningfully. We can provide quality education in a school that has 600 to 800, 1,000 learners and give them enough teachers to teach, than a school that has 100, 110 or even less. The minister was saying, in some instances you've got 50 learners, 30 learners. It's practically impossible to provide quality education. Doesn't happen anywhere in the world. We need to consolidate them and find ways to make sure that they are adequately resourced. They have teachers for the subjects that are offered, and they have even financial resources. In my previous area of responsibility, we merged close to 500-700 schools in the Northwest. We created 5 mega farm schools. Those mega farm schools, Honorable Mgodo can attest, they are some of the best performing schools in the province. Before that, Northwest was among the bottom 3 in grade 12 results. It moved because of some of these companies. Mpumalanga is moving that direction, it's building mega farm schools over time that should also be able to yield more or less the same results. Honorable Boshoff, I'm sure, numbers in a class is a class population, but as I've explained, learner-teacher ratio is the total number of learners divided by number of teachers or posts. Some of the problems are not related to learner-teacher ratio, but they are related to infrastructure. Especially your observation, it might be that the school doesn't have enough classes. And that's why learners are congested in one class and there are too many. So they need more classes. Because if there are more learners, they would have more posts. Because the number of posts is determined by the number of learners in education. So I agree with you that we shouldn't be, in fact, that's not our objective, of placing this burden on SGPs. More so for quintile 1-3, you're absolutely right. They don't raise funds, they don't have money. Where will they get money to get the extra posts? So we must give them what is due to them. So I think I agree with you on that. Honorable Kalina, or am I responding? I think you have not answered anything that the parents have.
I indicated that it's the national average, not the norm, not the, the guideline. Basically, our classrooms are between 48 square meters to 60 square meters, according to the infrastructure guideline. But we've also inherited some classrooms that are smaller than that. And generally, you're looking at between 35 and 40 children in a class to avoid overcrowding in the classrooms that are adequately built. But your learner-teacher ratio it hides what you raise of those that are overcrowding, when I say 35.7. And just to indicate, Western Cape for 2016 is 38.0, KZN is 38.3, Gauteng is 36.2. And if you take Mpumalanga, they were 33.4. This is now for the state-based educators. If they have dropped to 30, and that's what they would negotiate in the Provincial Education Labor Relations Councils, then they will be employing more teachers, and you then need more money for your salary budget.
I just want to respond to the DG. It is an infrastructure problem, but the infrastructure problem is the language and the teachers. because it's a vernacular language school. I forget the actual language that they speak. There are three secondary schools in the area of Tomachiru. Two of them are vernacular language schools, and the other one is a dual media. And that is why Mashishing High has so many learners, because the population of that area, Leidenberg, is that language. And I think it's time that the department really took an interest in the school, because that's why we're having the dropouts and having these children walking the roads and the streets and things like that, because they don't get the education they deserve. I would not like to be a teacher or a student in a class of 60 to 80. And I'm asking you on my knees to investigate these schools that are struggling. Please, thank you.
And the power of our science teacher. We will pay our intervention for it. We will really encourage our members to do that. Thank you very much for it. Hopefully, the response will be shared to the students. We will need to know what to do.
So thank you very much, Honourable Chief, for these presentations. Most of them today, the two of them, the plans is to say, where do we want to take our education system to? But let's hope that this remodeling of another financial part of it, we are going to be seeing it in either of it towards the end of the year. We will welcome you very surely at me when it comes to that. And also looking forward to even hear the public comments when it comes to the issues of the nature of these examinations. So it was indeed these presentations were very good and opened a lot of interest and opened up our minds to so many things that might be happening. So I close and thank you to you all on the chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to bring the issue of the presentations that we, you know, the timelines that we are using in the presentation before we come to committees. For instance, the presentation I already received it yesterday. I just want to find out, I'll show it to you. I received the email this morning, yesterday morning. So I just want to find out just, you know, what is the acceptable time, and especially the one of today. You know, we were supposed to have a committee sitting last week, we didn't. But I would have thought at least we should have received the presentation by Thursday. I don't know, but if you can just maybe guide me and say when is the right time for us to be able to receive the presentation prior to the meeting.
Well, thank you very much, we had an agreement with the department, they were very supposed to at least on Thursday, but the latest, what has been our culture, we said at least by Friday, let every member go to his or her constituency with the presentation, of which I understand very well this time, I think it will just by Saturday, it's around. It's something that we need to raise with the department to the future. Yeah, we received it on Saturday. I received it on Saturday. And I've been checking to say you sent it on Saturday. So I know those, you know, we can sometimes, we have those terms. But as I'm saying, thank you for raising it. And I think we are emphasizing again to our department just to say, please, with the presentation, let us receive them by Thursday. The latest, again, because we know mental sometimes are beyond each and everyone's control, the things that we are still waiting on. It should not be later than Friday, as per the arguments that we have. Let us hopefully stick to them so that members can get enough time to go through the presentation and be prepared for the meetings. Honourable Portia?
Chair, whilst we're on that, can we speak to the programme for next week? Are we sitting, seeing that Parliament is rising on Thursday? Because I see on the 20th of June we have something, and on the 27th. Thank you.
Honourable Bishop, we've got a new parliamentary program that we have just received.
Okay.
And it goes up to, what day is the program? I know, to the 15th. What was that month? But remember the date.
We're rising on the 15th. And then we have to be back on the 26th.
Yeah, we have a day.
Okay, honourable members, let me say this. There is a confusion in the parliamentary approval. There is a letter that has been written by the House Chair that said that week for next week that we wanted to end, we must make sure that the committee sees because they are plenary. But the latest again, where there is no letter from the House Chair now, we have seen another parliamentary approval that is out. So, hence, even the DG, when he was announcing that next week on the programs, on the items that are there, they are not even here because they relied on the first parliamentary program. They will be going to Swaziland, you know. So we are just waiting for that indication from the House Chair. If ever we still have to speak to her for the lot even of minutes that we still need to adopt, because that was the advice that we got from the House Chair to say, let us still even to adopt the set of minutes so that the committees we can arrive having adopted them. So in due course of which day, I think the House Chair will be communicating with us, will be clear as to how is the parliamentary approval, do we still have men after this week, because they were cutting short the issue of constituency period, extending them as we come back. So that is the last communication that we had. Yeah. So Mr. Brown will be communicating with you in due course. Thank you very much for that.
Chair, we still have two topics which are coming on 27. Okay.